Talk about tough groups. All I see is fire buffs and history people. You probably know a lot more than I know. So if I stumble, like they used to say, I read an account of the horses worked all together so well on a three-horse team that if one of the horses started to stumble, the other one pushed him back up. So that's kind of what I see tonight, you know. So if I miss something, hopefully you'll correct me. As the mayor mentioned, I was asked to do a kind of a history talk at the Hibernians in February, and really they do those on the first Thursday, but there's only a half hour for the program. So I kind of had to rush through it. What you're going to see is that half plus the other half that I'm going to do for the October Thursday meeting. So hopefully we'll be able to get through it in an hour and a half, maybe a little earlier. If I seem like I'm rushing, I just want to be able to get you out by 7:30. As the mayor mentioned, I got two announcements. One of them is we did an extensive recruitment effort last year and this year to try to diversify our department some more. I think we were very successful. We'll have to look at the list. We had almost 300 candidates take the exam, and we only had 6 failures. Deputy Chief Gregory and Deputy Chief Walker worked with the groups. We offered people to come in, and we did study groups and test prep. And I think that's really a great success that we only had 6 failures. I do have some brochures, and I'll put them back in the table back there of recruitment folders, and we have a card for our website. With joinafd.org. I think that's it. Not org, not gov. Org. And the second announcement is, as the mayor mentioned, we're going to have a gala. It is open to the public. We've got some invitations here. If you'd like to come, I think it'll be a great time. We'd like to have as many people in the citizens of Albany as we can get. It's difficult to try to put something like this together, but hopefully we'll get a good crowd. It's October 22nd, a Sunday, and it's over at the Capitol Center, just 2 blocks over. So Bill Tobler, he's one of the chairmen of the committee, and he's got some invitations. I've got some up here, so please, if you're looking for an invitation, please come up and pick one up. I'd be disappointed if somebody wanted to go and then they weren't able to go. So let's try to get through here. I know it's warm in here. Hopefully, as the mayor said, I'm a fourth generation firefighter. I have 3 nephews that are fifth generation firefighters. My grandfather, great-grandfather, father. My brother Henry was a captain. My brother Ted was a firefighter on the rescue squad. He died in the line of duty in 2007. I joined the fire department in June 5th, 1972, right after I was discharged from the Navy. There's a lot of old pictures here. I don't want people in the back saying, oh, there you are, because I'm not in every one of those pictures at the Capitol Fire and all the others, because there's some people that say, oh, that looks just like you. So that's not the case. When I did the talk at the Hibernians, they asked, do you have any traditions in the fire service? I said, oh, no, not really. Yeah, we're all tradition. Let me see if we can start history. This is about 70 years, because we'll go a little bit before we went paid. If you saw the movie Backdraft, on the kitchen wall, there's a sign that says 100 years of tradition unimpeded by progress. And yeah, that's probably most of the fire departments in the country. We're very difficult to change. You know, the firefighters, the volunteers didn't want a paid department. Then the volunteers didn't want horses. And then when they had horses, then they didn't want motorized apparatus. You know, it's still the same. The guy that kind of coined that phrase and put that up on the set was Steve Chikrosis. He was a battalion chief at the time when they made the movie, and he was assigned to help them out and study. If you look now at the TV show Chicago Fire, he retired as a deputy chief, and you'll see his name at the end of it. He still works the TV sets and tents and crews. And last year, I counted, he was in the show probably four times. He's usually the guy that they bring in when they're going to yell at all the other guys. So that's Steve. When we started in the volunteer situation, apparatus was pulled by hand and the volunteers ran behind it. Okay, that was called a run because we ran to the fire. You know, at the time the city was doing probably 40 or 50 runs a year. Right now we do almost 23,000 runs a year. Probably 75 to 80% are EMS, but we're still doing a large volume of fire calls. As I said, 150 years is a long time. This is an early hand pumper that was pulled by the volunteers, and they pumped the brakes, and the water came out the nozzle. Some of these, back in the early part of our history, the water mains were wood. If they weren't above ground, they were buried. When they had a fire, they knew where the spot were roughly. They dug up the cobblestones. They drilled a hole in the wooden main and got water for the fire. After the fire was over, they put a wooden plug into it, tamped it down, and then they could go to the next time they came down that street, they could go and get that plug. And that's basically now why even today officers say, grab that plug on the corner, you know, because that was a fire plug. Being, if you've ever heard the term plug uglies, you know, in relation to the fire service, the volunteer departments would get their biggest, meanest people to run ahead and guard the plug. And they beat anybody up that wasn't with their company. So that's how the term plug ugly came about. We got a couple pictures of early hand apparatus. 20 or 30 men would pump on those brakes. Very tiring. You know, it's not something that you would want to keep up more than probably 5 minutes. And then they rotate it. They pump in line from one pumper to the next pumper to the next pumper. These hand carts had some very decorative paintings on the side. If they pumped fast enough, the pumper at the hydrant could pump fast enough to the pumper at the scene, and if they didn't pump fast enough to keep the water moving, the tank overflowed and washed down the side of those paintings. And that was extremely embarrassing. It was something that you didn't want to have the water overflow and ruin these. I mean, some of these were museum-quality paintings. And that's really where you got the term washout. If you see somebody washed out of an event or a competition, that's where that came from, the washout. 1845, the competition was very stiff. We had a contentious rivalry between Engine 9 and Engine 11. Engine 11 was basically around Morton and Pearl, and they covered from Ferry Street South. They usually hooked up with Engine 8 when they went to a call, and this got the crew of Engine 9 kind of upset. So one night, the crew of Engine 9 had a sextant ring the church bell to signal fire. They had barricaded the street, South Pearl and State, and when 11 came along, you know, fight ensued and fists were thrown and a shot rang out and a firefighter was killed. This kind of spurred Chief McQuaid on to pressing further on for a paid department. They did go paid for a short period of time, approximately 3 years. Some of the volunteers didn't want to comply with those orders. Tivoli Hose refused to disband, so McQuaid fired them all, basically. We've got McQuaid. McQuaid was hired as chief of department. He kind of ran all the volunteers up to that point, so now he started with a paid department. They had several fires in 1846. They had a large conflagration that nearly wiped out all of downtown. When we look at the property that were lost, we're talking roughly Westerlo to Columbia was densely populated. The city went from a little south of Ferry Street up to probably just north of Clinton Avenue. So the career department disbanded in 1851. In 1860s, departments started forming paid departments all across the country. We also see that this is the point where we start to see the steam engine. This is the Beverwick, the first steam engine that was purchased. That was sent to Engine 4 on Hudson Avenue. I'm sure many of you remember Engine 4 above Green Street on Hudson Avenue, where the post office is now. That was usually considered one of the busiest companies in the city, so anything new went there. Looking at this point in time, the Civil War has ended. The glamour and the camaraderie had died. The volunteers were basically some of the richest and most influential people in the city. In most cases, they kind of ran things into volunteer organizations. So, again, departments are forming all across the country. In March of 1867, there was started a process through the state legislature to form a paid department. And that actually formed. Our first day was like the Monday, the first week in June. We had at the time about 11 engine companies and two ladder companies. Okay, this was reduced to 5 engine companies and 2 ladders, a chief, 3 assistant chiefs. One engine company was kept on. That was Americus 13, and that was Engine 6 at Jefferson and Swan. So one volunteer company stayed on for a short period of time until they received a new steam apparatus. Once a firefighter was hired, you were usually assigned to the firehouse closest to your home. It just worked out easier that way because you could go back and forth. To me, would have been a great work schedule. I know our vice president of the union wouldn't like it, but you started, say you started on a Monday. You got to go home for breakfast for an hour. You went home for lunch for an hour. You went home for supper for an hour and a half. Okay, then you're still at the firehouse. So you do that for 16 days in a row, and then that 16th day, you go home for supper that evening. You stay home that night, and you stay off all the next day, and then you start another 16-day cycle. So I thought it was great. You know, but it kind of puts a whole meeting on, you know, do we want a family or are we going to have lunch? You know. So, you know, it's kind of a little like that. But, you know, it was hard 150 years ago. The ranks, we had roughly 700 to 800 firefighters before that, and they were reduced to 150 to 200. Here's the crew of Engine 6 outside. Horses. Horses started, McQuaid really wanted to push for horses. The apparatus was getting heavier and heavier. If we look, there's an old saying that water and fire apparatus run downhill in Albany because the horses can't drag the heavy steamer uphill. So if you look at some of our older houses, they're all at the top of hills. You know, Engine 6 on Swan Street, Engine 1, they were started at 236 Washington Avenue where Townsend Park is. So it made it much easier. McQuaid pushed, and this was an added expense. The Common Council didn't want to go along with supplying horses for the entire department. So they tried to set it up over a course of a couple years. The steamers got heavier. We went to a three-horse hitch. And then there was also the quick hitch. This is Engine 10. Up at the original house at West Lawrence and Madison. The quick hitch hangs from the ceiling. When the bell hit, the stalls automatically opened. The horses went around, backed up under the harness, and the driver pulled a lever and they dropped down around their necks. Made things for rapid response very much improved. This next slide is a famous picture of a steamer responding in New Haven, Connecticut. We've got one from Albany here, not the steamer, but we've got a ladder truck. The mid-1960s, telegraph systems started to arrive. The telegraph alarm office, we had 22 alarm boxes when we started. Fire alarm headquarters were at the Union Bank on Broadway. A year later, they moved to the City Building on South Pearl. And eventually, in 1878, we had 75 alarm boxes. And eventually, the alarm headquarters moved to 25 Delaware Avenue. The nice Dutch-looking building there on Delaware and Myrtle. This wasn't an Albany steamer, but it was used by Albany. It was given to us when we purchased another new steamer. It was given to us to thaw hose in the wintertime. And this was kept in Engine 3's quarters on Broadway. But at about mid-70s, remember, the museum was starting, you know, they wanted to do an exhibit on firefighting in the State Museum. They asked for it. We gave it on loan, which hopefully if we get our museum going, maybe we can get it back. But when the state, when you have a lot of money at some point in time, the state doesn't always have a lot of money, just like the rest of us. But at this time, they had a lot of money, and they brought all their experts in, and they took it apart, piece by piece. Their draftsmen drew everything out. They labeled all the parts. They had all the parts over the floor. They had chemists come in and check the paint all the way back to the original colors. They rebrassed everything. You know, that's a beautiful piece. A great job of restoration. During the early days of the firefighting, most of the time the firefighters spent cleaning the apparatus, cleaning quarters, stalls had to be cleaned. horses had to be exercised. If the bell rang for some reason, they usually had to hook the horses up and take them in an exercise wagon, take them around the block, so they didn't get the idea that every time the bell rang, they weren't going anywhere. The horses are said, a lot of the horses knew what calls they were going to respond on by the number of bells. That's really something that the horse, because I know sometimes people say even some of the firefighters didn't know which calls they were supposed to go on. You wake up in the middle of the night and the bell starts ringing and you hear maybe six bells and three bells and two bells, and it's supposed to be 6-3-2, only somebody says, wasn't it 4-4-3? So it can be very difficult. If you went to the wrong location, you were in a lot of trouble. This is a picture of Engine 5. Engine 5 at parade day. This is a three-horse hitch, so it's a little heavier piece of apparatus. South Pearl, just south of Madison Avenue. We start to look, as the city starts to move further west, in 1874, we had Engine 7 and Engine 8 open. If you look at that house at Clinton, Ontario, it doesn't look anything like it does there. It has been remodeled, and we've got some pictures of that. But I think the original building was much classier than what it is today. So they were first. They first started when the council authorized it. They were in a place on Lake Avenue in a garage until this house was built. This is Engine 8. That was up at North Albany at North First and Broadway, across from, as my grandmother would say, the car barns, but Traction Company building. By 1884, the department totaled 145 members. The chief was paid $3,000 a year. Foremen, which would be the captains, were paid $900 a year. And the firefighters got $450 per year. We even had a position of department veterinarian, and he was paid $600 a year. Let's see, this is about the time on July 25th, 1886, that Chief McQuaid passed away. The next up was Deputy Chief Michael Higgins. He was promoted Chief Engineer. He was an internationally known fire service leader. He was president of the New York State Fire Chiefs Association. He was also president of the International Fire Chiefs Association. During his tenure, we had one of the most serious fires, and he had three general alarm fires in the first couple years. The most serious, 12/30/94, was the Delavan Hotel. I got a picture of Engine 1 in there and the department officers. If you look, as long as we're there, if you look at the front doors, we just replaced the doors on Engine 1. Rather than the overhead door up and down, we replaced it with bifold. It looks pretty much just like that. I think it's a great improvement. And hopefully it'll cut down on our costs for springs and cables, because that's very expensive. This is a picture, gets both sides. Originally, that was the exercise wagon on the side on Western Avenue. That's where they kept the horses. I can remember above that door was the hayloft. I was a lieutenant there one time, and a woman called from the state And she said, we're doing an energy audit, and we've got the plans here. And that room over to the Western Avenue position now, that's a hayloft. And I said, madam, I said, you're speaking of my bedroom. So, you know, there's just about no insulation in any of these buildings. You know, it gets pretty cold in the wintertime. The radiators kick along. Usually with the steam on the radiators, you can sleep with the window open, but sometimes the snow comes in if you've got a bed near the window. So back to 1894, December 30th. There's a picture of the Delavan House. You know, this hotel, very fancy, down on Broadway where the old train station is, Columbian Broadway. We lost 16 lives. It's one of the largest loss fires that the city's had. It was mostly chambermaids. They lived in the attic. Where that one round hole is there, that was a doorway to the attic to where they stayed. This is a picture of department officers right around 1900. There's a couple significant ones on Steamer 8. Mike Connors' grandfather was foreman on Steamer 8. You can, if you read that, it says Connors. Next, we have a picture of Chief Higgins and his clerk. The clerk was part of the officers in the department. That's their what's called their buggy. You know, even now, Italian chiefs, you say, well, we're going to have you drive the chief's buggy. They responded on a call. June 8th, 1910, Chief Higgins was going to box 134 at Clinton Avenue and Broadway. He lived just above Swan Street on Madison Avenue. They came down Madison Avenue, turned over on Eagle Street, and as they approached Hamilton, a westbound A trolley hit them. Seriously injured Chief Higgins and the clerk. Chief Higgins was off duty until February 11th, 1911, and then passed away. He was our 23rd line of duty death at that point. He was well regarded by the citizens of Albany and was loved by all the firefighters. He was loved. He was just in the late 1800s, early 19, he instituted the two platoon system. So that was a big change. You had a day on and a day off and a day on. So I'm sure that's why everybody really, really had a feeling for him. At this point, too, just before Chief Higgins went, we started to look at the city expanding to the south and to the west. They were looking for opening another ladder truck. When Chief Higgins passed away, Chief Bridgeford was appointed. So he worked with the very famous architect Marcus T. Reynolds, and they worked to draw up plans for Ladder 4 on Delaware Avenue. Excuse me. I mean, that is a huge house, and for somebody to build a house that large just for one company, I think it really showed some forethought of what the future is going to be, because we've definitely used that to its maximum. At one point, let me see if I've got the date here. Engine 9 moved in there. We had the rescue squad in there at one point. We had the snorkel in there at one point. Right now, we've got Ladder 4, Engine 9, and Rescue 9 run out of those quarters. Shortly after Bridgeford went in, one of his most serious fires was the Capitol, March 29th, 1911. You know, I'm sure you got to have to take the heat if you burn down the Capitol of the state of New York. You know, it probably wasn't a great time. Chief Bridgeward led everybody up the staircase to the second floor. They had superheated marble and plaster falling on them. They had it back down, and basically that west wing was destroyed. I was going to say 2 years ago. Well, like 5 years ago, they had a large celebration and display on that fire. And then finally, I get a couple more here of the Capitol. This is a steamer. I believe that's on the State Street side by Hawk Street. Yeah, this is usually the point where somebody says that's me standing over there next to the nozzle. But we won't bring that up. So Bridgeford had to finish up the building of Ladder 4. I'm sure Chief Higgins had a hand in it, but he never got to see the building completed. At this point, July 12th, is the high point of the horse-drawn era. Okay, at that time we had 65 horses. In January 1913, the first motorized apparatus was placed in service. And this was a 1913 Alco, again placed in service at Engine 4 on Hudson Avenue. This was the start of the ending of the horse-drawn era. This is a picture of Ladder 2 responding down State Street. The last horse-drawn response was Ladder 3 to Box 272 to Park Avenue. This was Upper Park Avenue near Main. That was our last response. I'm at the point now, I've got a short video. Has everybody seen that video? The horses going up Madison Avenue? No. We're going to try to get it going. It's a little tricky. It's only a minute and 56 seconds. We'll try to get it going because I think it's interesting. It must have been the guy that got a new video camera for Christmas. But the guy was Thomas Edison. Yep. Yeah. Was it a birthday or was it Christmas? I forget. Okay, go ahead. Yep.
From the Library of Congress in Washington, D.C.
I think it's Madison Avenue just below Lark. And it was all the apparatus at the time, the eight or so steamers and the two ladder companies. Okay, we'll see if we can get back to where we had left off. We got a little discussion here. Over the next several years, horses were replaced by motorized apparatus, 150-foot wooden ladders, or 65-foot wooden ladders were replaced by steel hydraulically operated ladders. Before we stop there, since it was the end of the horse-drawn period, I'd like to jump back to December 19th, 1892. That was Chief Higgins was in charge of the devastating fire at the Fort Orange Milling Company. That was 80 and 84 Columbia Street. That's kind of our design for the museum. And at that fire, a wall collapsed and wiped out the officer and the three firefighters on Steamer 4. The next day, December 20th, we hired a 20-year-old guy named Michael Fleming, and he was assigned on Engine 4. Firefighter Fleming worked his way through the ranks and eventually became chief of the fire department. and we'll talk about Fleming in a little while. Okay, now at this point, when we're starting demotorized, Chief Bridgeford commanded the force. This was an exciting time. We look at there's a couple significant fires. The Creamery Package Store was at 310 to 314 Broadway. That's right down there where those large buildings are now on Broadway and Prime Street. That whole area was densely populated with heavy 5- and 6-story warehouses. Box 82 was at Dallas and Hamilton. That box had roughly 24 serious second, third, and general alarm fires just in that one location. Many of them were between 1914 and 1925. The Hasselbach mattress factory had 8 serious fires in a 3-year period. So this is all those empty lots all down there where Hudson Avenue, you know, all that was densely packed with warehouses. There's a picture of a steamer pumping at the Creamery Package Store. This is a couple of fire pictures here. January 27th, 1916. Anybody know where that is? Yeah, usually everybody, I know, depending on the group you're at, everybody right away says, oh, that's the beer hall at the end of the street. Lodge Street, right. That was Odd Fellows Hall, 106 to 112 State Street. I got another one of that. That was completely gutted. All right. Going back, December 1918, Chief Bridgeford opened Engine 10's quarters at Madison, West Lawrence, Western Avenue. That's where the Children's Playhouse is now. This was the western part of Pine Hills. Chief Bridgeford eventually retired, and this brought in Chief Fleming. So he came on in 92, and 1923 he became chief. He's still in for a long career. Chief Fleming, he would be our chief for almost 50 years. So he was on the job for 76, and he responded to fires well into his 80s. You know, he was climbing up aerial ladders to roofs at 85. He would go to fires, and if, you know, everybody, they called him Iron Mike. If they heard his siren, it had a particular siren, a very loud siren, and if they heard that, right away everybody said, you better get to work, because you didn't want to be standing around. He would walk in on fires. Firefighters would be crawling in, because there were no masks then, on their stomachs choking, and all of a sudden somebody would be standing up beside them, hitting them with his cane, saying, get in there. And he was standing up in the smoke, and he'd push him in. Some firemen saw him and say, hey, old timer, you can't come in the fire. They thought he was a resident. He says, I'm the chief. My father told me one time, he said, a lot of young guys said, I'll be glad when this old son of a gun goes. And he says, they were on, they had their career, they retired, and they died, and he was still there. And they said he used to go to wakes and sit in the corner and just sit there all night going, he thought he was going to outlive me, huh? He thought he was going to outlive me. Well, he didn't. A couple pictures during Chief Fleming's time. That's the Wooster Building. It's like 36 North Pearl. It's also Clapp's Bookstore. You know, that's right down there where 40 North Pearl is now. Major fire. Some ladder work at the fire. Chief Fleming did, early 1926, he purchased the water tower. And this was used for a good number of years at major fires. It was 65 foot, and it could supply a master stream. In July of 1929, he opened a company called the Rescue Squad. He put them at Western and Washington with Engine 1. They were the specialty group. He picked the firefighters for their expertise in firefighting, mechanical ability, and first aid. So they were actually our first aid company, first doing BLS up there in Western and Washington. He also opened Engine 11. The city's still expanding outward. Everybody knows this particular house. It's kept up well. It's New Scotland and Maplewood. One of the serious fires Chief Fleming had, March 17th, 1928, at Memorial Hospital. We had lost seven patients and staff to smoke inhalation. This was where Memorial Hospital was first on North Pearl, where the Leo O'Brien building is, right across from the palace. A lot of ladder rescues, you know, the very difficult. Take somebody down a wooden aerial ladder with really no sides on it. Whoop! That was Chief Fleming's car. He was well known. He had a 1933 Packard. This was a twin of Franklin Roosevelt's Packard. If you go over to the State Museum, I think it's on the fourth floor there. It was bright blue. The two of them, that used to be the thing up at Saratoga in the summer. They would be parked together side by side, and people would know. That was saved. A gentleman in Georgia called me, and he had purchased it and restored it. You know, it looks fantastic. An updated picture on Engine 1. That's Engine 1 Rescue Squad and the battalion chief. Mid-30s of the remodeling of Engine 7. This was where we got the building went to that yellow brick. It was really a public works project. I think it was more to keep people working and busy. Really, I think the house had more character before. But we did Engine 7. And they did it the front of Engine 3, the front of Engine 8, and all sides of Engine 6 with that yellow brick. And the interiors were remodeled. Later into the 50s, we received from the federal government these civil defense pumpers. Remember, that was the time they were worried about, a nuclear war, and they were built up everybody. They gave a lot of these out. We got four of them, and they were placed around the city. March 19th, 1962, we put the snorkel in service. This was in service for the good portion of 20 years. It was still on when I came on. We would go out and practice in it. And if you look at a lot of the pictures from that time, it was in most of the pictures of the era in the 70s. 8 night, or there's a picture of Fleming, probably in his 80s with his cane, looking a fire scene over. Then in 1967, the city purchased three pieces of apparatus, the rescue squad, engine one, and ladder three of this vintage. They were the first diesel apparatus that we had in the city, and it was the first diesel apparatus probably in the whole area. So now we've gone back to from horses to gasoline to now diesel apparatus. So Chief Fleming had really seen it all. He retired December 1st of 1968. He was roughly 96 or 97, 76 years with the department. He passed away December 29th of 68, so he was in retirement like 28 days before he passed away. Then in March 10th of 1969, Battalion Chief Augustus Brophy was appointed chief. At that point, that was a really turbulent time. There was talk of starting a union, and there was a lot of unrest in the department. December 24th of 69, that's when it started snowing and didn't stop until like the 27th or 28th. The shift that was on the 24th stayed on the 25th, and the 25th came in. And then both of those stayed on the 26th when the third shift came in. So you had roughly 12 or 13 people responding on a piece of apparatus. But the streets were very clogged with snow, and most of the time you didn't get to go down the side streets. You had to carry ladders and hose down side streets. This was a point where they worked a lot of hours. Some of the wives had called about where the husband's going to get overtime. Chief Brophy didn't think that was a possibility. He said, no, we've never had overtime. But Mayor Corning had a plan. They were going to pay overtime. But that's all it took, and that kind of pushed things into early the next year. The APPFA 2007 was formed. When that happened, Chief Brophy retired, naturally, and Chief Fitzmaurice was promoted. And he served well into the early 80s. Also, western portion of the city. Now we start to look, we had built Engine 4, the new Engine 4, out there on Washington Avenue Extension. Up until that point, the furthest piece of apparatus west on the city was Engine 10 at Western and Madison and West Lawrence. Okay, so for them to run out there, and even if you had a box alarm, at that time I was on the rescue squad, and we were coming from Engine 1's quarters, in most cases, when we had a call or an alarm drop at the Theresian house, in most cases, we didn't get anything on the radio until we got there, because we were right behind Engine 10. Engine 10 would come over West Lawrence and then turn up Washington Avenue. We were always right on their tail. So we didn't get any, signals, or there wasn't anything, that there was nothing showing. So they moved Engine 4 out there. It was a good probably 3 months, and we hadn't had a call out there. And then on Saturday, October 29th, about 8:30, of course, Saturday, everybody was watching emergency at that time. Then we get a call for the Theresian house. And everybody said, we'll be right back. Maybe we can wait through the commercial and we'll come back. We'll still get to watch emergency, because we're not going to get out there. We're going to get a signal. Lieutenant Davis is going to go across the street. He's going to say a false alarm, and we're going to turn around. So we got in the truck. We headed up. We went past Quail, past Ontario. And I said to the guy standing on the side behind the officer, and he said, what are they doing up there? Then we went by Manning. Then we got up to Colvin, and we said, you know, something's wrong. We got, you know, he wants everybody to come out there just because he's got to go out. And we got Breveter, and we started to approach where the highway led off onto Washington Avenue, I-90. And I could see this, I was looking over the top of the truck, I could see this little white VW start to pull out. And we had the light, so our driver pulled a little bit to the left, and the VW pulled out a little more. So we pulled more to the left. And then she just pulled right out just as we went through the intersection. Our bumper hit her front fender and spun her around in a circle like three or four times. And we thought, oh, well, we're pretty good now. All this stuff is flashing through. We're pretty good now. And I bent over a little bit to look through the windshield, and I could see a bulldog from, like, on a Mack truck. And I thought, what the heck is a bulldog doing there, that little statue? And boom, we hit the empty tractor-trailer gasoline tanker, nose to nose, and pushed him back. It pushed our frame through the back of the squad about a foot. That was a truck. I was standing here, and I jumped off and checked the officer, and the guy on the other side jumped off and checked the driver, and then I had a sinking feeling that the VW might have been underneath us. And so I bent down, and it wasn't. So I said, well, that's good. And then we started looking around, and it was like 300 feet back Washington Avenue. So I ran back, and I hurt my knee, too. So I got a C2 on that, okay. And when I got up to the car, she rolled down the window, and she had a Mickey Mouse face mask on, and she was going to a Halloween party. And I said, didn't you see us coming? She said, well, yeah, but I thought you were going to stop or go around us. I said, why didn't you take the mask off? Well, she was close by going to this party. So she was lucky, and we were lucky. That was the last night that they used that particular 67 rescue squad. That was the tank truck. A more modern picture of Engine 1, a little modern of Engine 4, or Ladder 4. All right, we're looking into the 80s now. We've got 11 engines. Companies, four ladder companies, a heavy rescue, three paramedic units. We started our emergency medical program in 1976 or 78. So we had been doing that for some time. I think most of the bugs at that time in the 80s were kind of worked out. Still minor things. The 11 houses were spaced throughout the city. Our firefighters were responding to provide basic and advanced life support. We were tending care for scrapes and bruises, broken arms, legs, heart attacks, and strokes. We've delivered babies and performed cardiac reversals on patients that were clinically dead. And I think all of us have done one thing or another with that at some point. Also during the 80s, some of the houses were consolidated. Engine 8 was taken out of service. Their house had been closed and demolished for the highway, and where I-90 comes down over North First, where that highway bridge abutment is, that's where Engine 8 was. So they were sharing quarters with Engine 3. They closed. This point, Chief Fitzmaurice retired, and Deputy Chief Bruce took over for 2.5 years. He retired. Chief Moran was in for about 2 years, and till December 12, 1987, and then Chief Larson was promoted chief. In the late 80s, several of the houses were consolidated and engine companies were closed due to the consolidation. A new house was built in Arbor Hill that housed Ladder 2, Engine 2, and Rescue 2 and the Rescue Squad. So Engine 2 on Lark and 3rd closed. Ladder 2 on Clinton Avenue, which was one of the first houses that we built, closed. I got a chuckle. Ladder 2 on Clinton Avenue is still used by different organizations and construction companies. And at the time, it was like, oh, it's going to fall into Tivoli Hollow. The back end has got cracks in the walls. You know, it's not going to last more than a month, you know, and it's still there. Late 80s, we built Engine 10 on Breveter Street. Again, so we can kind of go further west to reduce our response times. Engine 10, Ladder 3. Ladder 3 moved first from Ontario Street. They moved out to Breveter. And then, like a month later, Engine 10 moved out of Madison and West Lawrence. Also, the 2nd Battalion runs out of that quarters now. Another conversion. Whoop. This one. This is the steamer crew of Engine 5, Steamer 5, at 289 South Pearl Street. That was their second house. They were on Madison Avenue for a while, but this is their second house. And all that had been demolished. Engine 5 was in on 4th Avenue in Franklin. But we built our headquarters on South Pearl and Morton. And looking at the addresses, I knew that was basically on 289 South Pearl Street. And engineering called me. I was deputy chief at the time. And they called and said, okay, they're working on the plans. And there was a couple buildings they had to tear down. I said, what's the address? And he says, it's going to be 291 South Pearl. And I said, well, he says, can we make that 289 South Pearl? Because we had a whole range of numbers there. And I thought it was nice to make it 289 because that was one of the locations that Engine 5 was at previous. So I thought that was kind of nice. Today's firefighter is technically skilled. I took some of these pictures in the early or mid-90s. There's even more equipment now carried by. This is the rescue squad. We took them up to Engine 10 on Breveter, and we had them lay out all the equipment just so we could get an idea what they're carrying. This is Ladder 3 when we first purchased it. You can see this is some of the ladder equipment. That's Ladder 2 that we did the picture with. But the pike poles, the saws, axes, fans, just about anything you can think of that a ladder company might need. Engine companies. This is one of the newer Engine 11 on New Scotland Avenue. Naturally, an engine company does carry some ground ladders, mostly hose. You can't really see the hose up at the top of the picture, but the hose, self-contained breathing apparatus, pike poles. We were carrying at the time some foam, extinguishers. So again, hand tools of all types. This is one of our newer rescue rigs, Rescue 1. Runs out of Western and Washington. They still small. This is an older rescue picture, but still the same amount of equipment's contained on the smaller unit. Defibrillators, first aid equipment, oxygen equipment, medication boxes, always some extinguishers. Nobody wants to be too far from being a firefighter, you know, that they want their extinguishers. Still, it's a lot of equipment for one small two-man company. In November 30th, 2000, Chief Larson retired. And December 7th, 2001, Executive Deputy Chief Mike Dunn was promoted. This was at a period where we were up at Henry Johnson Boulevard with the police for a while. That wasn't really a fun experience. Oh, we like police officers. we'd much rather have our own home. Chief Dunn served until October 6, 2006, and at that point, Chief Ferrezzi was promoted. Before I show Chief Ferrezzi, this is a picture of a fire on Madison Avenue, third alarm fire. Chief Ferrezzi, this was on his last day of retirement. The firefighter today, we do still just about everything. Hazmat entry, we're the Albany County hazmat team. We're the lead agency in the four county hazmat team. First aid, firefighting, auto extrication. We were lucky enough to secure a grant from the port committee in New York State, and this was roughly $480,000 for a boat, our marine unit. We put that in the spring and take it out in the fall. It's got a pump on it. We can pump over 1,000 gallons a minute. We could, through those nozzles, we could pump to land companies if we had to. We did a drill down at Global, and we were pumping through a nozzle that has 4,000 gallons a minute to supply that was specially purchased by Global. And this boat, I think we pumped about 2,000 gallons a minute through it. Smaller boats, we did have some Zodiacs, but mostly rely on the marine one. This is the slide we always like to use at the end of our budget book, that to try to convince everybody on the council that we need money. We're our benevolent army of the city, serving the citizens. When somebody calls, it's usually a 3-minute response time. I think that about covers it all. Let me see if I... All right. That wasn't too bad. 15 minutes short. That other talk we're going to do at Hibernians in October, that's basically going to be the second half of this slideshow. So if anybody was going to go up, it's basically the same thing. Any questions? Yes. Well, I can explain from my experience, okay, and again, I came on June 5th of 72. Before I came on, if you came on the job, they put them on one at a time usually, and you were sent to the firehouse, and even at that point, they were still sending people close to their home. I don't know if they figured that you knew the streets better in your home neighborhood, but you got there and you walked in. You were told, the officer said, "Here, I'm the officer. Here's your coat. This is where you put it on the back of the truck. And if we get a call, wherever we go, you hold on to my coat and go where I go." Excuse me. Then in 72, we came on, we did a week's training. We had, I think there were 10 of us. I'm the last one left in my class, and there was 10 of us. A couple had passed away. We got a week's training, and then we went down to the chief's office, and they gave you your assignment. Late into the 70s, it was like 2 weeks training. Into the 80s, it was a little longer. Until now, we do roughly a 14-week training program. They do everything rope rescue and high-angle, low-angle rescue, work with self-contained breathing apparatus, auto-extrication, a very extensive course. It's really expanded from before I came on. Usually, you want to come on, you want to listen to your officer. We tell the new guys, keep your mouth shut and listen, because nobody's going to like it if you're a know-it-all. There's always time for kind of fun in the firehouse. When I came on, the new guy usually had to clean the stove at night, and you had to be the one that you had to mop the kitchen floor and run the buffer on to buff the wax up. You also, if the slicer, I know at Engine 1, they used the slicer, you had to take the slicer all apart. And this was a big industrial commercial slicer. You had to take it apart and clean it. I was on for 2 or 3 months, and one of the other shifts had a guy that was always fooling around. And his lieutenant told him to run the buffer through the kitchen, so he took the buffer and he ran it through one door and out the other door. And that didn't go over good, and the lieutenant called the captain and said, you got to take him over there. So he came over, and he started doing the cooking, and we were working like a Sunday, Tuesday, Thursday. And Sunday we came, and he had, like, for lunch we had this big pork roast, and he used a slicer. So I said, okay, so we broke it down. Then at dinner, we had this big bottom round roast that he used the slicer on. And I said, oh, well, okay, I'm a new guy. Then Tuesday we came in, and we had some other roast that lunch he used the slicer on. So I know a little bit what's going on, and I'm not going to say anything. Dinner came, and he used the slicer again. So we came back Thursday, and I said, hey, what are we going to have for lunch? And he says, Franks and beans. I said, okay, good. And I'm thinking to myself, good, ain't going to be any slicer today. So he said, you need help? And he says, well, yeah, we'll have a salad to, break the lettuce up. So I'm breaking the lettuce up, and I see him, and he slices open all the hot dogs, and he takes a big handful, and he goes over to the slicer and slices them in little round. I said, come on. I said, what's with the slicer? He says, when I was the new guy here, he says, your father was cook on the squad. And he says, now I'm cook, and you're new on the squad. He said, so payback's I said, yeah, okay. There was always that little camaraderie and fun in the firehouse, Not like sometimes today, everybody's on their cell phones and, texting or tweeting, But we always had a good time, If I got time, we had a call, and this was kind of good. We had a call, Thanksgiving weekend or something, because everybody was watching football, but it was nice like this. And we had the kitchen window open on Washington Avenue side, and the smoke started rolling in. Somebody said, will you close the window? The smoke's coming in the kitchen. And everybody said, when we all jumped up and looked, and up the street there was a big column of smoke from a house, and then the page opened up, so we went on the call. So Engine 1 had one of the pumpers that had the front end hookup, but it was out of service, and they were using one of those CD pumpers. And when they pulled up, and usually a pump operator can get your water, within a couple minutes, because there's a tank on it. You get the water, and then you go and hook up. Some pump operators are very worried about, once you get water, you only got a certain amount of time before you're going to run out. It's only like 5 minutes, depending on how much water they use, so they won't give you water right away. So we had a a pump operator named Don, and my partner and I were on the front stoop, and the fire was whipping out over our heads, and we were putting on our mask, and we got the line in between our legs, and we're looking back, and this driver, if there was a police officer there or a pretty girl, he was always talking to him. And we turned around, and I looked, and he was standing there like this, and he had a police officer on one side and a nice-looking girl on the other side. I said, we're in trouble. And the officer ran back and said, what are you doing? Well, you know, come on, give us water, give us water. And he said, later I found out, he said, oh, no, he says, Terry, he says, you can't get water from these trucks. You can't hook up because they don't have the front-end hookup. Well, they got the side hookup on each side. So after the fire, he just yelled at him and yelled at him and said, you know, we're going to be out there drilling, he says, every single day, and you're going to get water. You should be able to stop the truck, pull the line off, and get water to the crew. Okay, I'll work on it. So it was like 2 months, and we forgot all about it. And it was like 9:30 one night, and we get a call for State Street down near Willett. So squad and Engine 1 pull out, and Engine 1's ahead of us, and we neared Willett, and they had this big picture window. And you could see there was fire all over the window, and it was flickering off the ceiling. And I said, oh, I said, we got one. So the lieutenant called and said, heavy fire condition on the first floor. So we jumped off, my partner and I and the lieutenant. We helped them drag the line in, and we got to the front door on the second floor. You know, it was like a half a story. And my partner, Kenny, and I were kneeling down, and I got the line between my legs, and I'm starting to fix my mask. And Terry steps back, and he's going to kick the door. And I said, Terry, try it. Maybe it's open. So I just got my face piece on and my helmet, and I could hear the water coming. And it went shh. And it started leaking. I said, oh. I said, this is going to be, I said, we're going to knock the pants off of this. It's going to be like 5 minutes. You know, we get in there. He said, it's nothing flat. He said, and Terry said, you ready? And he leaned over and he swung the door open, and we went crawling in on our hands and knees. And I had the line and looked up, and here's this guy sitting with his girlfriend with his arm around her, and they're watching the fireplace. And the fireplace was reflecting off the ceiling. And we're going, Kenny and I are going, you know, Terry says, oh, I'm sorry, sir. We must have the wrong apartment. He said, so we had to scoot back out, and we went back out, dragged the line back to the street, and Don, the driver's jumping up and down. Did I give you water? Did I give you water? He says, I told you I'd give you water. He said, yeah, you gave us water. He says, you know, didn't help any. It was the wrong place. But, you know, there's always little things like that. Kind of past the time, you know, it's how you used to working with people for 24 hours. Even now, it's still 24 hours. You know, it's a shorter work week, but still 24 hours with somebody. You know, it's like a second family. Any questions? Yep. Nah, we should have, but, we should have, but, it was just too big an undertaking. Sometimes I wish we had, but, you know. Anything else? Yep. Okay. Yep, we're still on 24, 8 in the morning to 8 at night. But there's four platoons, and you just go 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4. So you work on Monday and a Friday, and then the next week you work a Tuesday and a Saturday, and the next week it's Wednesday and Sunday, and so on. And then there's Kelly days in between where you're off, but your shift is on. You know, worst thing they ever come up with. You know, every time I was on a Kelly day or something, you had a major fire. You know, and all these guys got memories that they never get. I mean, you can be 10 years. You know, remember that call on State Street where we had the line? Oh, that's right. You were on your Kelly date. You know, remember that rescue? Rescue we made? And, you know, took two people down. Oh, that's right. You know, you were off that day. So, you know, you want to be there. You know, if you're needed, you want to be there. But Kelly days, there's four or five a year in between. So that'll give you a day off, almost a week off from one shift to the next. Yep. It is difficult. As I started in the beginning, we're out there. We started talking about it in January of 16, and all the command staff got together. We went out there and tried to recruit. As I said in the beginning, you know, I think we got a bigger pile of candidates than we had ever done before. So we are trying to recruit and diversify. The last class we put on was 50% minorities. So we're really starting to pick up a little bit, and hopefully we can continue that. You know, it is a difficult job, a difficult test. The competition is fierce. You know, it's not like back in the 70s. Usually your alderman said, you know, did you want to be a policeman or a fireman? And, you know, they kind of got you on. I know when I came home, out of the Navy in December of 71, and in January, Mayor Corning was recalling returning vets down to the office, and he asked, you know, have you thought about what you want to do? What do you want? You know, I said, well, I'd like to go on the fire department, and you know, it took at that point, a lot of people didn't want to go on the fire department. You know, the working conditions and the salary has really improved, so it's really difficult to wrangle a place. You know, the test isn't hard. It's mostly stuff that, you know, people ask me, you know, what should I study? And it's, you know, it's ninth grade science and math and English. You know, I usually tell people, did you pay attention in high school? If you paid attention, you'll be okay. But with that many people, you know, a couple hundred people, it is difficult. So this time, the last test we had, once everybody signed up, we brought the entire group together and offered test prep classes, trying to make things a little easier. Hopefully we'll get a little better representation of the city. Yes? We don't really know that. When we did the test prep classes, we noticed that there were a lot of people of color. When we get the list, it's just names. You know, the personnel administrative services has kind of a breakdown. We haven't seen that yet. So, you know, when we start the canvas, what we'll do is we'll say if we're looking for 20 people, we'll take maybe the hundreds and the 95s, and we'll send them letters. Hold on, throat's drying out again. And what we'll do is we'll bring them to the office and we'll show them the CPAT test. That's the Candidate Physical Agility Test. That's something that's designed by the state of New York. We have to show it to them. We have it on video of what's required. And it's things that you do as a firefighter, you know, raising a ladder up, carrying a saw back and forth, dragging a hose line. There's roughly 7 or 8 stations. We'll show them that, and then we have to wait 2 months for them to hopefully work out and practice, and then we bring them back, and then we put them through that test, and it's a pass-fail test. Once we get that, then we'll start to look over the list and we'll send them for a psychological exam. And most of the people pass the psychological. A lot of times if people don't, it's because of maturity. You know, we get a lot of people that are 18 or 19 and they're just not ready to come on. because we've seen people fail two and three times, and it, all of a sudden they're 25 and they're a little more mature. And then once we get that, then we the hiring committee actually picks, goes through the list and does interviews and picks people out from the pool of candidates. We get a letter that just tells us, here who's your, who you're going to hire. Oh, let's see. Last time I checked, it was 15 to 20. It's come up at a 255 right now. You know, and we've got, you know, we're also looking for female firefighters. We've got, I think, roughly five now. We had six. We lost a couple. One of our deputy chiefs is female. You know, we've got a captain that's female and several firefighters. Okay. And we've got a couple Asian firefighters. You know, so we're really trying to go the gauntlet of all the different nationalities. It's just difficult to try to, you know, keep pushing and pushing, you know. Well, we went the last time when we've, our main recruiter, Deputy Chief Gregory, is in the back. We did, we went to churches. We had open houses at firehouses. We had open houses at Boys and Girls Club, Arbor Hill Community Center, at City Hall. We had a really good turnout at City Hall that night. You know, we didn't think we were going to get as good as what we did. I think we had like 30 people come to City Hall. You know, and then we'll do posters in all the businesses. Barbershops, tailors, you know, so we really tried to, the APPFA, the union helped us. They went out, they tried to recruit. They helped with the test prep. They provided some of the materials. So everybody's, you know, we're all trying. It just can be difficult. Yep.
You have a junior fire program, do you know?
Yeah, we have the cadet program and an explorer program. Cadet, we do in the summer. We try to bring high school kids in to work the summer, you know, with the fire companies, see what life in the firehouse is like.
How's your recruitment?
Not as good as we would thought. You know, we have them write an essay, we interview them, and you know, they come to the firehouse, and then sometimes, you know, do you want to be a firefighter? And they'll say no. You know, well, you know, how come we you pass through the interview? You know, it's you know, that can be strange at best. We had a few that again, because of the medical and the firefighting is related, we had a few cadet program people that were really into the medical and wanted to go on to be a nurse. I think we had one that wanted to be a doctor, and they came to observe all the things we did on the EMS angle. Hmm? No? Well, I thank you. I hope I didn't bore anybody with anything. Try to keep it moving.